Right now, it's my pleasure to welcome back to the show. You read him every week in the daily newspaper in the business section, and I'm very pleased that he joins us here and shares his expertise with the audience on a monthly basis. David Murata, president of Murata Wealth Management, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me again.
You heard the story, and it kind of ties into what we're going to be talking about today and what we were talking about earlier. I want to tie this together because the theme for today's program is Grow Rich Slowly, The Four Secrets of an Automatic Millionaire. And yet we're telling kids that they really shouldn't aspire to this. And I say, well, it's okay if you decide you want to be poor or you want to live in poverty or you want to live with less things. And we're going to be talking about that today even. But to tell kids that there's something wrong with that, I mean, people aspire to this. And so I'm kind of wondering, what is this mixed message? Because the Occupy crowd is saying, hey, we don't have enough. Somebody else is taking all this stuff. But on the other hand, they're singing an Occupy song and saying, we don't want that stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting that the best education is education that inspires people to strive for the best that they can be.
Mm-hmm.
And the four secrets of an automatic millionaire are all putting in place things that really are based upon having what psychology calls an internal locus of control, and that is that I am the master of my fate. I can do things if I strive hard enough, if I work hard enough, I can actually get things done, and it's a matter of process of making sure that I work hard to get those things done. An external locus of control is really a victimhood. It's all out of my control. There's nothing I can do. It's just going to happen to me. And unless all those people out there change, nothing good will ever go right my way. And if that's true, there's no need for education, because it doesn't matter how smart you are or how hard you work, it's not going to go well. And so part of the success that people have is a product of having an internal locus of control and then just working really hard to get at it.
You know, that's a fascinating analysis, and I think that it's important in the context of this discussion for us to consider how our kids are being educated or indoctrinated in this case, is that, you know, if you're just laying back and letting life happen to you, you may be in trouble and you may be dissatisfied for your entire life. But if you wrest control of what it is you would like to do and then make that happen. I mean, nothing's ever going to be perfect. We live in a fallen world, but you can put yourself in a place that you want to be in. That's kind of part of the first point here that we're going to make today. The secrets of an automatic millionaire is to find your calling in life. And you say you have to do what you love. And some people say, well, how could I do that? You know, I'm stuck in this job. How am I going to get there?
Yeah, most people who have a salary and a 9-to-5 wage, they work their 9-to-5 wage, they don't really enjoy their job, and they don't really then achieve as much as they could have if they had found their calling in life. Most entrepreneurs get ahead not with their work from 9-to-5, but with their work after hours from 5-to-9, and they do it because they love what they do, and so they're just enjoying it, and they don't feel like it's work, and it's their life, it's their calling, it's who they are. And they can be absorbed in a project for days and never feel like it's work. So I think that's the difference, is if you're doing a salary job, you're not going to do as well in life as if you're doing what you really enjoy to do. And entrepreneurship is one way to do that. But there's a lot of salary jobs that you can put yourself into and not just work 9-to-5, but also work the 5-to-9 to really get ahead and advance within a larger organization or corporation.
I remember, I think I was in high school, and they started giving us these aptitude tests. You know, what is it that you like to do? And I can't even remember what mine came out to be. It kind of strikes me that it was a little off and a little odd. But are those valuable ways to find out? How do you really find out what your calling is?
Yeah, it's interesting. I took an aptitude test in high school. I was a bright kid. I was student body president. And yet all my friends had things that they scored in the 80s and 90s and lots of choices to choose from. My highest score was 69, and that was in physics because I enjoyed physics at the time. But all the things they asked for, it was like, well, how would you like to do this? And none of that really excited me. I had my heart set on something bigger than the aptitude tests that they were giving. I think the only way that you find your calling in life is you try a lot of different things. And it's one of the reasons I recommend for parents who are trying to help their kids find their calling, is that kids really ought to be trying out employment from age 14 on. And if you've worked out employment from 14 through 21, then by the time you hit 21, every summer you've been doing a job, you really have begun to figure out what you like and what you don't like. And summer jobs too often are menial tasks of waiting tables or helping people in a store or something like that. And you should encourage your kids to do things that are not that, even if it's for no pay. They should just go and shadow someone for a summer or work in some place that they're interested in to see what those people do. It's probably the best gift that we can give our kids. Every Christmas, we tried to give our kids vocational gifts.
Mm-hmm.
So my daughter was interested in graphics. We got her a graphics tablet. My son was interested in film, and we got him film software and things like that. And so that they had a chance to try things out. Too many kids in college, you look at what people study in college, and they study pre-med, pre-law, pre-business, or history, or English. And then you go out in the real world and you find out this person runs a Subway sandwich, this person mm-hmm. teaches belly dance, this person, and there's just a ton of careers. And the real careers in life have a much richer diversity than the things that we end up aiming for in school.
And I had similar experiences when I was a kid. I remember my parents encouraged me to write to people who were in different lines of work. And so we had a family friend who was a lawyer, and he took me to downtown L.A. one day, and I sat in the courtrooms in these big buildings. I was probably about 13 years old, and I could remember that day very, very clearly. It made such an impression on me. I thought I might want to be a lawyer. We had a dentist friend, and I wrote a letter to him, and he actually said maybe you ought to not consider going into dentistry because the technology that's coming forward, you might not be well in a job anymore. Because they were thinking they were going to be able to conquer all of that. And then, of course, one that actually proved to be very interesting was politics. And we were friends with somebody who knew, I think his name was John Tunney, a senator in California, back when you and I were kids, and had a chance to write to him about politics. And who would have thought all those years later I would have been wound up in elected office? So it does pay off. Let's go to the news right now. And weather, and if you have a comment or a question about becoming a millionaire, an automatic millionaire, we'd love to hear from you. 977-1070. Stay with us.
His bite is worse than his bark.
Did I start?
No! Rob Schilling on News Radio 1070, WINA.
(977) 1070 is the phone number. Take advantage of this opportunity to speak with David Murata. He's online at emurata.com. Also, I know you have a new website. I forgot to write the new one down. MurataOnMoney.com, is that right?
Yes, okay. That's correct.
Yeah, that's where there's some terrific information. And we're talking today about the four secrets of an automatic millionaire growing rich slowly. We also have a caller on the line, so let's welcome Gary to the program. And Gary, thanks so much for calling The Schilling Show.
Hey, Rob, thanks a lot. I really enjoy hearing Mr. Murata on your show. And I'm a religiously devout reader of his column in the local paper as well. I really like especially his end-of-the-year articles where he's telling us to look at our portfolios, rebalance, check our assets. The one I had a question about, I think it was yesterday's paper, where he talked about how much a person should have set aside to be able to maintain their lifestyle and retirement as they have during their working years. And if I remember correctly, you wrote something to the effect that you need about 23 times your expenses in your retirement account to be able to maintain your lifestyle in retirement. I have a couple questions. One, does that amount include the equity in your home? And two, what do you try to target for your clients in terms of the average return to get to that point? And I'll just hang up and listen to your answers.
Hey, Gary, thanks very much for the call. We'll let David take it away.
Yeah, Gary, those are great questions. First, the reason it's about 23 times or 24 times your standard of living is that when you reach age 65, you shouldn't be withdrawing more than 4.36% of your net worth in order to have your money on average last to age 100 and give you an 80% chance of it lasting until you die. So there's a safe withdrawal rate at every single age. They're on our website. The only one I have memorized is age 65, which is 4.36%. So 1 divided by 4.36% is going to be about 23 times your standard of living. So if you have $1 million, that means at age 65, your standard of living that you withdraw from your portfolio needs to fit in $43,600. And that's where we get that number. And it depends on how late you retire. If you retire at age 70 or 72, it's almost 5%. then you only need about 20 times. So if you just work long enough, your assets will build up to the point at which your safe withdrawal rate is increasing and come down, or your multiple of your standard of living will come down. And so at some point, those two numbers cross, and when they cross, you can safely retire. Some people try to plan that at age 50. Some people try to plan that at age 80 because they haven't saved enough money.
Mm-hmm.
And so whichever way you do it, it tells you when you can retire and when you can't retire on the standard of living that you want to have. The first question you had was, did that include your home? We generally do not include your home. And the reason is this: whatever your home is worth usually goes for your retirement, your retirement house or lifestyle, nursing home or whatever at the end of life. And so the house is usually when you can no longer live in a house and you need care, that money is reserved for that purpose. And that's generally the way in which a lot of families end up handling the sort of end of life care. And the second one is there a target or an average? We're trying to make about 8%, which is about 3% over inflation. Inflation runs at 4.5% or 5%. So we count on making at least 8%. The target that we have averages higher than that, but there's an 80% chance we make over 3%.
Mm-hmm.
The average is closer to, instead of 3% over inflation, it's more 5 or 5.5% over inflation. A 5% over inflation would be about 9.5% or 10%, somewhere around there. And so that's generally what we're hoping to average, about 5.5% over inflation. And then what we're counting on is 3% over inflation for planning. That gives us an 80% chance of success. If you just use the average, it only gives you a 50% chance of success. But great, great questions.
Yeah, Gary, thanks for the call. And that leaves a line open right now at 977-1070. Leon standing by. If you have a comment or question for David Marotta, we'd love to hear from you, 977-1070. So that kind of leads us into the next one of these four secrets, and it is don't postpone. Now, there are so many people who say, well, I'm going to think about this for a long time, but every day, every hour costs.
Yeah, if for every 7 years that you delay getting your finances in order, you basically cut in half your ultimate retirement. Because 7 years is the average doubling in the markets, and if you wait 7 years, you only have half the growth. The reason why don't postpone is so important is if you save $10 a day over your working career, you have about $1 million in retirement. It's a very small amount. If you delay several years to do that, then suddenly instead of $10 a day, you have to start saving $20 a day, mm-hmm. or $40 a day in order to reach the same results, and it doubles about every 7 years. So the younger you start, the bigger your retirement. And what happens is it's just like dieting. You know, I'm always sort of trying to watch my weight and get good exercise. And I read some things that say people will say, I will get my finances in order as soon as, and then they have some excuse. Or they'll say, now that I look at my finances, I can't begin to save because, and they'll have some excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll say, I can't save and invest until or unless something happens.
Right.
And those are all excuses that really end up debilitating any effort. So not postponing is the biggest thing. This is the beginning of the year. People have energy for New Year's resolutions. And the resolution should be to get your finances in order in a way in which you can do it once and then have it continue forever.
There's some other interesting parts here of this concept of don't postpone. And one of them is living rich or being rich. And so there's a lot of people that live rich. They have ostentatious lifestyles, but it's really all a facade. And if you scratched it away or if you looked at it, it's all borrowed and there's really nothing there.
Yeah, wealth is what you save, not what you spend. And that's probably the most important mantra that people trying to live rich are trying to spend money and spend money into richness. And that's not going to work. So what we try to do is we try to look at what do you need to save in order to have a better lifestyle over your entire lifetime that's constantly either going up or increasing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a gradual process. We think people should be saving 15% at least of their standard of living, their take-home pay every single year.
And then I guess this is a corollary, consume less and invest more.
Yes. And not only do you need to be saving or paying yourself first, but you need to be saving and investing because it's the investing that will allow your money to double every 7 or 10 years.
We're going to take a brief break here. David Morata is our guest. He's online at moradaonmoney.com. And we're talking about Grow Rich Slowly, The Four Secrets of an Automatic Millionaire. When we return, we'll take your calls at 977-1070. We're also going to be talking about taxes, how taxes play into this, and also how to automate the process. The Shilling Show back with the final segment of David Morata right after this. And we're heading into the final segment with David Morata. We're talking about Grow Rich Slowly, The Four Secrets of an Automatic Millionaire. 977-1070 is the phone number if you have comments or questions. You know, you read them in the newspaper, but this is your chance for a one-on-one and a back and forth. And the topic is important because many people, unfortunately, in America do not receive adequate education, either at home or particularly perhaps in school, on the concepts and principles of solid and sound economics. Let's go to the phones and say hello to Greg. Greg, welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with David Morata. Go right ahead.
Hey, David. I'm 53 and have almost no retirement, a couple thousand bucks. At age 41, I had life crisis and had to start off from a negative position. And now I own a home, and what I've been doing is every time I get extra money, I've paid down my principal balance owed and got it down considerably. That's what I consider my retirement plan, and I would eventually sell it and downsize. What do you think? Is that the wrong thing to do? And I'll just sign off and listen.
Yeah, Greg, thanks very much. Hold on just a second. There we go.
Yeah, Greg, yeah, first of all, a little encouragement. According to sort of the life cycle of savings, you have two times to save. It's before kids and after kids. and most people wait until the after kids. So a lot of people end up starting late, and so you're in good company there. Paying down your house is a very safe and secure thing to do, but if your interest rate is as low as the interest rates are today, it's probably better to put that money into investments that will appreciate as opposed to an investment that is paying a very low interest rate. So if you're at 5% or 4% or even 3 point something now, you can generally make more than that in the markets. The markets generally make about 6.5% over inflation. If inflation is running at 4.5%, that's where you get an average 11% return. Now, I know a lot of people are saying, you know, but the U.S. markets have been crazy and markets have dropped. Mm-hmm. But if you still look at long-term returns, even over the last decade, you've got great returns, just not in the S&P 500. All the other categories are doing well. So I recommend that people not pay off their mortgage, assuming that they put that money instead into investments. And I heard one advisor say the best hedge against inflation is a 30-year fixed mortgage, because that amount will never go up. And as inflation goes up, you can put your money elsewhere where it will appreciate.
That's a fascinating statement, because we've thought that before, but we have seen governmental intrusion into the mortgage process now and the violation of contract law by the government, by government order. So I sometimes get scared that, hey, they might come in and say, your rate's too low, it's artificially low, you're going to have to recast your loan. It could go the other direction.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure in a court of law they won't be able to lower your rate, because that would be against individuals, but to raise your rate, because that would be against individuals. But they can lower your rate. And certainly if they raise your rate and you've got this pile of cash that you've got invested, you can always slap that pile of cash over your mortgage and pay it all off.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a more secure way of handling your finances. Plus, if you need the money, you can't get it back out of your house, but you can always sell some investments. So it provides an emergency fund as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's go on to the automation part of the process, because this is something that many people never get to.
Yeah. The biggest change that you can make in order to automate becoming a millionaire is to have your paycheck deposited into a taxable investment account.
Mm.
So the entire paycheck goes into your investment account. And then a day later or 2 days later, you take out whatever you need to live off of, and the remainder stays in your investment account. So if 100% of your paycheck gets put in, you take 85% out every month, or you can even divide that by four and take it out every week in order to for your standard of living and for your payment. That automates the process of 15% or whatever you've decided to save staying into your investment account, where it can be invested and ultimately grow. That automates the process. Everyone tries to work in reverse. They put their paycheck into their checking account, And then if ultimately they ever happen to build up enough money, you know, then they think about maybe moving it into investments.
Mm-hmm.
And that way is very difficult. It requires work on your part every single time it builds up. And when it builds up, the mind thinks of 16 things. Well, maybe I'm going to need a new car, or maybe it's going to break, or maybe. And then people end up building up sometimes tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars in their checking account needlessly when it could have been invested for the past few years and have been earning some kind of return. So automating that is the biggest change you can make. It's the topic of a book, The Automatic Millionaire, that was a bestseller about 10 years ago. And then having a portfolio asset allocation that you just mindlessly rebalance back to. And we recommend rebalancing at least once a year, maybe twice a year. You could do it in May and October. Those are good months because the markets often go up a lot before May. And then you rebalance. And then if they go down a little bit by October, then you rebalance again. And that life cycle helps keep your portfolios balanced. And so that rebalancing boosts your returns as well. And so by just having your paycheck deposited and then twice a year where you're rebalancing and investing, you can automate the process of saving and investing.
David Morata is our guest. Just a couple of minutes left. 977-1070 is the phone number. And I guess the other one that's really difficult, and I express this lament almost every time it comes up, is the whole issue of managing taxes. It makes me angry that I have to pay so much every year because I can't figure out what I need to do. It's what we're living with right now, so there are things that we need to do to deal with it.
Yeah, it's amazing. A dollar saved on taxes is better than a dollar earned, because if you earn a dollar, they're going to tax a piece of it anyway.
That's a good one.
So the biggest tax technique that you should use, and 2012 is the last year you can do it under the Bush tax cuts, is a Roth tax conversion. Convert your IRA to a Roth. Every IRA, traditional IRA or 401k that you have, it has a payment on it that needs to be made when you take it out, a payment for taxes. It's like having a mortgage, only it's worse, because as it grows, so does your tax liability.
Mm.
So if you grow a portfolio from 100,000 to 200,000, you now owe taxes on the whole 200,000. Whereas if you could grow that 100,000 someplace where it wouldn't be taxed, you wouldn't owe any tax. So moving money this year, the last year to the Bush tax cuts, from an IRA to a Roth IRA where it will never be taxed again, is the biggest tax management piece you can do. We've got a lot of articles on our site. We've kind of have that down to a science, and I'll be blogging about it more early in this year. But it's worthwhile, especially if you're in the higher tax brackets, which are going to go up by 5%. You can save 5% on the net worth of your IRA simply by prepaying the tax now and moving it someplace it'll never be taxed again.
There is, David, a lot of bold talk about tax reform amongst the Republicans that are vying for the GOP nomination. Are you holding out any hope that if one of them were to get elected, that they would put in some of these bold plans, which include slashing or eliminating either capital gains or corporate tax rates?
I would think with the current mood of the country in terms of the polarization that's in our country right now, the best bet is on nothing happening.
Hmm.
Because just as now the Republicans can filibuster anything that the Democrats propose, the Democrats will still be able to filibuster anything the Republicans propose.
Mm-hmm.
And the days of the supermajority hopefully are over, and we need to find something that the entire country can live with and settle down with. With our growing deficit, I don't think tax reform will help the rich. I think the rich will continue to pay a higher and higher percentage of the taxes collected. But I also don't think it will be quite as bad. The Bush tax cuts expiring at the end of the year are almost certain. I was surprised when they were extended for 2 years. That was not what I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
So there are always surprises like that. But I don't think they're going to be able to continue the Bush tax cuts with the politics that are in place currently.
Let's go to the phones very quickly. Just about a minute left, and let's say hello to David. Welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with David Morata.
Yeah, hey, guys.
Hi there.
Good show. Hey, my question is, you were speaking about the conversion to the Roth this year. My wife and I currently have a SEP IRA. Does that all? Would you recommend that as well for a SEP? And I'll take my answer off the air, okay? Thank you.
Yeah, David, thanks for the call.
Yeah, David, great question. All the forms of traditional IRAs can be converted from SEP IRAs to traditional IRAs to 401ks. All of those can ultimately be converted. And the advantage is you should bring yourself probably up to the next tax bracket. If you convert so much that you push yourself into a higher tax bracket, you may not want to keep that. What we do is we take whatever the value is in your IRA and we convert it in five different buckets. And then we see if a bucket's up enough to warrant pushing you to into a higher tax bracket, we keep it. And if it's not, we don't. That's called a Roth segregation technique. And you can find that information on our website.
And that's MuradaOnMoney.com. And David Murata, always a terrific show. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really appreciate it. And we are heading to the news right now and the weather. And when we return, as promised, it is part of the 99, the Occupy song, sung in the voices of the Woodbrook students themselves. It will probably make you ill, but you need to hear it. Stay with us.